Bandeham.
The following is a class on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 29, Text 70, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on August 20th, 2000, in Mumbai.
Vaishnavamscham Bahumanena Dinanam Anukampaya Maitriya Chaivatmatulyeshu Yamena Niyamena Cha. The pure devotee should execute devotional service by giving the greatest respect to the spiritual master and the acharyas. He should be compassionate to the poor and make friendship with persons who are his equals. But all his activities should be executed under regulation and with control of the senses. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter, it is clearly stated that one should execute devotional service and advance on the path of spiritual knowledge by accepting the acharya. Acharyupashanam. One should worship an acharya, a spiritual master who knows things as they are. The spiritual master must be in the disciplic succession from Krishna. The predecessors of the spiritual master are also his spiritual master, his grand spiritual master, his great grand spiritual master, and so on, who form the disciplic succession of acharyas. It is recommended herewith that all the acharyas be given the highest respect. It is stated, Gurushu Narapati. Gurushu means unto the acharyas, and Narapati means thinking like a common man. To think of the Vaishnavas, the devotees, as belonging to a particular caste or community, to think of the acharyas as ordinary men, or to think of the deity in the temple as being made of stone, wood, or metal, is condemned. Niyamena. One should offer the greatest respect to the acharyas according to the standard regulations. A devotee also should be compassionate to the poor. This does not refer to those who are poverty-stricken materially. According to devotional vision, a man is poor if he is not in Krishna consciousness. A man may be very rich materially, but if he is not Krishna conscious, he is considered poor. On the other hand, many acharyas, like Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, used to live beneath trees every night. Superficially, it appeared that they were poverty-stricken, but from their writings, we can understand that in spiritual life, they were the richest personalities. A devotee shows compassion to those poor souls who are wanting in spiritual knowledge by enlightening them in order to elevate them to Krishna consciousness. That is one of the duties of a devotee. He should also make friendship with persons who are on an equal level with himself, or who have the same understanding that he does. For a devotee, there is no point in making friendships with ordinary persons. He should make friendship with other devotees so that by discussing among themselves, they may elevate one another on the path of spiritual understanding. This is called Ishtagosti. In Bhagavad Gita, there is reference to Bhodiyanta Parasparam, discussing among themselves. Generally, pure devotees utilize their valuable time in chanting and discussing various activities of Lord Krishna or Lord Chaitanya among themselves. There are innumerable books, such as the Puranas, Mahabharata, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and Upanishads, which contain countless subjects for discussion among two devotees or more. Friendship should be cemented between persons with mutual interests and understanding. The devotee should avoid a person whose character is not fixed in the standard understanding, even though he may be a Vaishnava or a devotee of Krishna. If his character is not correctly representative, then he should be avoided. One should steadily control the senses and the mind and strictly follow the rules and regulations, and he should make friendship with persons of the same standard. The word Mahatam is defined as the great souls. In the translation, Srila Prabhupada uses the word pure devotee. How important it is in our spiritual lives to execute our activities under regulation with control of the senses. The purpose of all regulative principles in devotional service is to learn to control the mind and senses so that they can be fully engaged in the service of the Lord. Otherwise, a Vaishnava sees no real value in controlling the mind and senses. In the material world, of course, there are those who are in the influence of the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness. The true value of the mode of goodness is that it provides the most blessed opportunity to engage our senses and mind in Krishna service and thus transcend the modes of material nature. So to control the mind and the senses is very, very important. Sometimes it becomes fashionable even within the society of Vaishnavas where they don't want to speak about this topic of giving up sense gratification. They're more concerned with speaking either prajalpa or gossip, or sometimes even they're very concerned with speaking about the various pastimes and philosophies regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, unless they are very deeply convinced and motivated to control their mind and senses, relinquish sense gratification, they will have very little realization of the subjects they are discussing. When we first came to Krishna consciousness, we were very amazed how Srila Prabhupada, as well as his representatives, most of their lectures were simply about the subject of giving up sense gratification. How deadly sense gratification is to one's spiritual life. And we have one wonderful devotee here who has told me and others that he would go to many, many kathas where days and days and days, sometimes 6 hours a day for 6, 7 days would just be all kinds of nice stories, some philosophy. For years and years. But he never heard anyone say that you have to give up sense gratification. And when he came to the Hare Krishna temple, immediately everyone's telling him you have to give up sense gratification. And in the classes, this fact is just hammered into our consciousness to the extent that a devotee feels guilty about sense gratification. So this is very good, because Prabhupada used to say that sense gratification and Krishna consciousness go ill together. Just like if you take cold water and throw it into burning hot ghee, what will be the reaction? They simply will not mix. It will create a violent reaction because they're opposites. Similarly, if we're trying to actually cultivate Krishna consciousness and make steady progress, you have to very carefully learn how to control the mind and senses. Tani saravani samyamya yukta asita matpara vasehi asyindriyani tasya pragya pratishtata. One must restrain the senses and simultaneously fix the consciousness on Krishna. One who can do this is known as a man of steady intelligence. So restraining the senses means saying no to the temptations of material illusion. But simultaneously, we have to understand just controlling the senses by forbidding them to engage in pleasurable material activities do not in and of itself purify our heart. It's simply the format by which we can use the same senses and mind in Krishna's service. That is bhakti. Because after all, there are many of those who are following the Astanga Yoga system, the Jnana Yoga system, or the Karma Yoga system, Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Astanga Kanda, and they are controlling their senses. Some are very, very staunch celibates. When I was traveling in different parts of India, I was living with various people in the jungles and in the mountains who were doing all kinds of tapasyas. One person I lived with, in 35 years, he never sat down or laid down. He only stood up 24 hours a day. That was his tapasya. And in those 35 years, he never ate grains. He followed ekadasi, fast. And you know what it is to be a sadhu? He had nothing. When you're a sadhu, you beg, and the only thing people give you is some roti or some grains, because other types of food like vegetables and fruits and dried fruits are expensive. They don't give that as charity. So he was always practically starving. And he was not the kind of person who would just beg, no, no, please give me a vegetable. He would just go like this, and people would give him grains, and then he would go and cook it and give it to other people, but he wouldn't touch it. And the way he would sleep at night is he would carry around a little piece of wood with a rope on it, and he'd find a tree and tie the rope to a branch, and then on the little piece of wood hanging from the rope, he would lean on that. But he would always be on his feet. And because his feet were so swollen from not getting off them for 35 years, he had to tie pieces of wood and sticks to his ankles to keep the support. Hare Krishna. And when I would be sitting down and he wanted to talk to me, his legs would be straight and he would bend his back all the way down so his head would be the same level as mine and he would talk.
Hare Krishna.
Of course, he was actually a very wonderful devotee of Ram. He would go out and beg, and he would collect. Usually, the only thing he would collect was rice and dal, and he would cook it for me. He'd go out and collect the wood and cook the rice and dal and give it to me and some other sadhus, and he would have nothing to eat. Practically, the only food that's not grains that was cheap enough for people to give to him as a beggar were peanuts. He would just eat a few peanuts a day. Hare Krishna. And he'd be very happy to serve others. So in this way, he was a very austere person, no doubt. But he was actually trying to honestly and earnestly use all of his energies in Krishna's service. However, we lived with many others who would just eat a handful of rice a day, who would just sit in back erect meditation for 10, 12 hours a day without moving. Hare Krishna. Perfect celibacy, as far as I understood. But because their mind and senses were not used in positive devotional service, therefore, really, what was the gain? So devotees try to control their senses by giving up sense gratification so that they can be fully used for the pleasure of Krishna. And how we use them in the pleasure of Krishna, that is according to Krishna's desire. Prabhupada would sometimes say, if you're living under a tree and you're asked to live in a palace, you should not be attached to your tree. And if you're living in a palace and Krishna wants you under a tree, you should not be attached to your palace. We should simply be attached to service. And of course we know, mad bhakta puja pyadika, the best way to serve Krishna is to serve his devotees. And as we learned from yesterday's verse, every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. Thus, every living being has a relationship with Krishna. So in today's verse, we are learning from Lord Kapila Dev, specifically, according to our particular relationship with another living being, how we should serve them. A pure devotee, that means one who really understands the truth and how to live by it, executes devotional service by giving the greatest respect to the spiritual master and the acharyas. Herein, Srila Prabhupada is so nicely explaining how the spiritual master is one who is repeating the word of Krishna through disciplic succession. And when we make that connection to the spiritual master, then we make a connection to to all the great personalities within that discipling succession. This is the difference between most of the spiritual movements today and a true parampara. A personality cult, we may say, where one person may be very learned or may have some special powers of mysticism, may be very, very powerful, charismatic, able to inspire others, sometimes able to very expertly exploit others. But such a person, his credibility or her credibility is based on their own merit. Whether they're right or wrong in their conclusions, where they're going to take you and how they're going to take you there, is based on their own conception. And we simply have to have faith in what they say. Therefore, Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, rejects this conception. Evam parampara praptam idam rajarshayabhidu. If you want to understand me as I am, you have to hear through disciplic succession. He begins a disciplic succession, and those who preserve his teachings through their life and through their words are the actual representations of this, representatives of the disciplic succession. When we read about the history of the great personalities within our parampara, we become very much fixed in faith in actually what we are receiving. When we came to Srila Prabhupada and surrendered our lives at his lotus feet, taking vows of dedication with an actual, honest willingness to follow him, then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur becomes our spiritual grandfather. Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj becomes our great-grandfather. Thakur Bhakti Vinod, our great-great-grandfather. Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Rup Sanatan, Raghunath, they all become our forefathers. And we're directly connected to them. And we are receiving their mercy. It's not that the spiritual master gives his own mercy. He's actually giving, in essence and in fullness, the mercy of all of these previous acharyas. Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Palam. Bhagavatam describes that what Vedavyas has given is much sweeter because it has been tasted by the lips of Shukadev Goswami. So similarly, Krishna's message, which was originally imparted at the dawn of creation to Lord Brahma, has been tasted, digested, and distributed by all these great, great personalities. And what we are receiving is the remnants, the Mahaprasad of all these great souls. In what we hear, and in the mercy that we are receiving. So one should not only worship one's own spiritual master, but one should also worship all the previous acharyas in our disciplic succession. That is why on appearance or disappearance days, with great reverence and devotion, we discuss the teachings and the life and principles that were demonstrated by these great acharyas. And it brings great, great pleasure and inspiration to our hearts. And by seeing the transcendental consistency in what they are teaching and how they are living, we gain great confidence of the absolute nature of what we are being given. This is very, very important. Because as Prabhupada would say, there are many mystical exhibitionists, magicians, and learned scholars who come to plunder our faith by various tricks. Oftentimes, they claim to be God. But a genuine, authorized spiritual master simply claims to be the servant of the servant of the servant, representative of God. Prabhupada would tell us that I am simply repeating the words of my spiritual master, who is simply repeating the words of the line of Sri Rupa and Raghunath. When a newspaper reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, "Are you perfect, Swamiji?" Srila Prabhupada said, "I may or may not be perfect, but I'm only repeating the words of my spiritual master and the previous acharyas. Therefore, everything I say is perfect." That is spiritual master. Sakshadharitvainasamastasastraya. Therefore, we understand that the spiritual master is representing the Supreme Lord. So we offer him that respect, not just as an external show, but from within our hearts. Because Guru Tattva means that Krishna is actually manifesting himself to us in this mortal world through the medium of the grace of the spiritual master. Without that culture of respect, real spiritual advancement is stifled. Prabhupada called this the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. In order to progress properly, we need a society around us that is protecting the principles of a Vaishnava culture. And the basis of culture is respect. How to serve and how to respect everyone according to their particular position. That is the subject matter of the verse today. To the spiritual masters, the Diksha Gurus, the Shiksha Gurus, the Bhatma Vidarshika Gurus, and other senior people who are giving us transcendental wisdom, who are senior to us in age, in realization, in amount of time practicing devotional service, senior to us by living according to the principles of a ashram that commands respect. To such persons, it is our duty to offer proper respect. It is so important that Prabhupada went to such an extreme that he said, even Mayavadi sannyasi, you must offer him obeisances. If you do not, you must fast for that day. Now, how is this? Why would we offer obeisances to a Mayavadi sannyasi? Prabhupada is saying in his books, which are the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Mayavadis are envious of Krishna. They're personally, by their philosophical persuasion, they are trying to destroy the body of Krishna. They're trying to kill the pastimes of Krishna. They're blaspheming the names of Krishna by saying they're temporary manifestations of Brahman. Hare Krishna. Mahaprabhu said, if you hear from Mayavadis, your spiritual life will be doomed. Hare Krishna. So obviously, we should not hear such things. But still, if we see, we must offer obeisances. Otherwise, we have to fast. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not associate with them in any way. But still, when he would see them, he would offer his obeisances. Because it's the culture of understanding the principle of renunciation. The sannyas order is the principle of renunciation, and it must be held in veneration. No matter how many renunciates are rogues and thieves and fall down into illicit activities, still, if we want to have a culture where we can be Krishna conscious, we have to maintain respect and veneration for the principle of renunciation. Just like Srila Prabhupada would tell us that his father, Gaur Mohan Dev, who was a very, very elevated, cultured Vaishnava, he would invite sadhus to his house and serve them very nicely. And Srila Prabhupada would say that some of these sadhus, they were smoking bidis and chillums and they were doing all kinds of other things. What kind of sadhus are they? Why my father is doing all this, serving them so nicely and offering respect to them? If they're fallen and degraded, then obviously they are not worthy of anything. However, the culture is, because they represent this order, we become purified by offering respect to that. Sometimes the tridanda we see in the Ramanuj Sampradaya, and even sometimes in Shankar Sampradaya, they have little flag that's on the top of the tridanda. That's the flag of renunciation. Just like there's the flag of India. No matter how corrupt the ministers and the politicians may be, still you offer respect to the flag. That's culture. You may think, well, I don't like who the leaders of the country are, so forget that flag. Still, culture is, they may not be representing properly, but the principle that they're meant to represent is to be respected. So how to respect different people of different relationships that we may have is very, very important. To those who are senior, we offer honor. To those who are poor, we serve them by respectfully offering them compassion. And Prabhupada makes a very clear understanding of what it means to be poor. Poor doesn't mean without money, without food, without clothes. Poor means a person who does not have Krishna consciousness. They are spiritually poor. I remember years ago I met with Mother Teresa, and there was a newspaper reporter that just came in for a few minutes and asked her a question while we were discussing various matters. The person was glorifying her for so nicely serving the poor. She said, "You don't know who the poor are." She said, "The people in the Western countries, living in their big, big mansions and expensive homes, driving their nice cars, eating all kinds of foods, they are poor. Because although they have so much wealth materially, their hearts are lonely. Their hearts are starving. And when I look in their eyes, I see poverty of the heart." She said, "These people dying in the streets of Calcutta with nothing, when I look in their eyes, I oftentimes see that they have faith. They have faith in God. They have abundance within their hearts." So what is poor? A rich man, fearful, suspicious, lonely, never getting enough, taking sleeping pills to go to sleep at night, taking alcohol and drugs to somehow or other cope with the anxieties of the day, going here, there, to Europe, to Alaska, to Singapore, on all kinds of vacations, to somehow or other just find some variegatedness in life, to just escape from the loneliness within. Persons in poverty. Sometimes they even engage in cruel, egoistic acts to others just to get some excitement out of life. They are poor. And we find the example of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. They had nothing. They just had a set of torn up, rejected loincloths. They had a little begging pot. Nothing else. They would sleep under a different tree every night. And they didn't have a bed. They would just sleep on the hard, cold, or hot ground. And for those of you who have been to Vrindavan, you know, it's freezing cold in the winter and burning hot in the summer. They had no electric fans or air conditioners. They would sleep on the ground under trees. Chaktvaturnamasheshamandalapati. But yet, they possessed the greatest wealth. And they knew they possessed the greatest wealth, the wealth of devotion. And they are the real givers of charity. Some wealthy man may feed the poor some food, but for how many generations will we remember the food that he has given some poor man? Rupa and Sanatan, their donation, their charity is their books, the example of their lives, and even 450 years after they've left this world, still there's millions of people getting nourished by their charity and becoming enriched spiritually by remembering their example. This is real charity. This is real compassion. This is the true distribution of wealth. When Srila Prabhupada came to America, he had 40 rupees. But actually he had nothing, because there was no place in America that anyone could exchange a rupee for a dollar, because they considered a rupee is useless. What am I going to do with it? There were practically no Indians in America in 1965. Very, very few. They had no influence within the American society. But whoever did go there from India, their only purpose was to somehow or other get the money of America. And to this day, we see now there's like a pilgrimage. It's like the Muslims go to Mecca on pilgrimage. The Indians are going to America on pilgrimage. But Srimad Bhagavatam calls it a pilgrimage of crows. Prabhupada gave the analysis of the old crows and the new crows. Said Americans are like old crows, because the pilgrimage of crows is they go to the place where there's garbage and sewage to suck upon. Did you ever see a crow when he's in a place where there's nice sewage? Very happy. Feast. Crows like that. So when there's a nice, big area of sewage and garbage, you'll find a pilgrimage of crows. But the old crows, generation after generation after generation, they've been eating all this garbage. So they're definitely completely attached to it. It's just their routine, just enjoying all kinds of sense gratification. But a new crow, who just comes to that pilgrimage site, he's so enthusiastic, so fresh, and so light, and so exciting. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada compared to the Indians who go to the West as the new crows. They're very, very, very excited about this new life of pleasure, comforts, and sense enjoyment. In fact, it is a statistic that of minority groups in America, the Indians are the wealthiest. Of minority groups in America, the Indians have become number one of amassing wealth and having high occupations. On one level, they're just under the Jews, and another level, they're actually a little above. This is what I was told, was in reports of the newspapers. So why is it that the Indians are number one of all minority ethnic groups of America? Because they're just so enthusiastic to get that garbage. Hare Krishna. So for those of you who are thinking of going to America for your economic concerns, be careful. Don't go as a new crow. But what we have seen is even when people go with the idea that I'm just going to go as a Vaishnava, and I'm going to collect some money and come back so I can better serve Krishna. Sometimes you may be able to do that. But most people, once they get there, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, he went there with 40 rupees on the Jaladuta across the Atlantic Ocean. And he did not want anything from America. He wanted to give. New York City is the wealthiest city on the planet, at least in those days. There's more millionaires in New York City than practically any city in the world. There's unbelievable, immense amounts of wealth. There's Wall Street. So many big, beautiful buildings, homes, towers, skyscrapers. Can you imagine Srila Prabhupada coming from the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan and looking up at the skyscrapers of New York City? Hare Krishna. But he came there, and when he saw all these people in their big, beautiful cars, riding in their big, beautiful roads, he simply cried in compassion, thinking, such poverty. What can I do to help them? To give them Krishna consciousness. To give them an actual meaning to life. And he did. The people who Prabhupada first preached Krishna consciousness to, they were actually people from very upper and middle class families, very wealthy, who were so frustrated with that material way of life that they actually gave it all up. They were looking for something else. If you examine what Prabhupada did culturally, it's quite exciting. Here were people living in big, beautiful, comfortable houses, television in every room, telephone in every room, over 16 years old, an automobile for every member of the family, and roads that you can drive without all these polluting rickshaws and buffaloes. You can drive practically anywhere. In America, you can drive from New York to Los Angeles, that's about 4,000 miles, and never have to stop once the whole way. Not a single stoplight. The only time you have to stop is to refuel with petrol. Hare Krishna. How many times do you have to stop here in India? So the people had from upper middle class families. Some of these children or young people were children of millionaires and multimillionaires. Literally. But they saw that all these crows, they're just eating all their material sense gratification, but they're just crows. They're not happy. There's no inner fulfillment. People are just superficial. Do you know what we used to call it? The plastic society. People's minds were made out of plastic. People's whole lifestyle was made out of plastic. What is plastic? Something very, very superficial, unnatural. People just didn't know how to be real. And therefore, the wealthiest children of the wealthiest families in the world were rejecting the whole culture of their parents and forefathers because they wanted to find something real in life. And here was Swamiji sitting in Tompkins Square Park. By material standards, it's not an impressive park. It's nothing even like Shivaji Park. What to speak of Cross Maidan? It's just a little place, and the occupants, if you go today, practically all are prostitutes, drug addicts, or alcoholics. And there's all kinds of dangerous street gangs that like to fight and beat people and mug people and rob people in the areas. So Prabhupada would sit in a place like that and chant. And here, people who are their families are willing to give them best jobs, best cars, best of everything materially, and they join Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. And then Prabhupada, the only place he has to provide them to live is 26 Second Avenue. They're sleeping on the floor. Their parents aren't going to give them any money to support this type of lifestyle. So they're just eating some rice and dal, and they're just living in poverty with Swamiji. Literally. In the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, whoever joined this movement lived in poverty because there was no money. They lived the way Prabhupada was living. Just sleeping on the floor. There wasn't any cars. There wasn't any vehicles. There was no support. Very, very simple food. New York City's freezing cold in the winter. They couldn't even afford heat. Even a few years later, when the temple was on Henry Street, we visited. In the winter, there was no heat. Snow everywhere. Freezing winds. And people inside are just trembling and shivering because there was no money for heat. Hare Krishna. People didn't even have enough money to get on the subway. Unless they somehow or other distributed it back to Godhead and convinced someone to buy it. So why would the children of upper class and even millionaires live a life like that and be in bliss? And those people were going out as enthusiastic as anybody you could ever see to share their message with all these rich people. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Hare Krishna. Look at you. Holes in their dhotis. They didn't even have proper dhotis. Now you see people with dhotis with nice stripes on them, and ladies with saris with all kinds of floral designs and stripes. In those days, the saris were just the cheapest cloth you could buy. And they wouldn't even get cloth that was the size of a sari. Because if you have 20 people in the temple, you go to a discount wholesale house and you get the cloth that's kind of a little bit rejected because there's a discount on it. And you just buy a whole roll of it in quantity. And then with the scissors, you just cut it the size of a sari. And then all the ladies were putting those on. Hare Krishna. And the men would just make them into dhotis, the same type of material. Just the cheapest. It wasn't even cotton. It was polyester. Because polyester was the cheapest cloth you can get. And polyester is kind of crispy looking, so they'd be kind of stiff. Nobody in America wears things like this. It's lower. Even the people in the ghettos in poverty would laugh at people wearing these things. And yet all the devotees would go into the cities, the little murdungas and cartels, dancing and chanting and smiling and trying to convince all these millionaires passing by, take Krishna consciousness and be happy. We have the real wealth. Harivo. So this is the revolution Prabhupada created. He said, I have not come like my Indian brothers and sisters to America to try to take something from America. Because India is the wealthiest country in the world spiritually. I have come to give the wealth of Sanatan Dharma. Now when Srila Prabhupada, people started giving him some wealth. He would use it all for the purpose of giving Krishna to others. He didn't keep anything for himself. This is compassion. So a real devotee of the Lord is compassion to the poor. Whatever their material situation, whether they're in the lower classes or the upper classes, makes no difference to us. One time, one of our very senior devotees told me something very interesting. This person is somewhat wealthy and established here in India. He told me, when I go into a temple, naturally, people are going to come and treat me very nicely because I have money. Hare Krishna. What we look for is we see how those devotees are respecting and treating the very, very common poor people. If they're treating them the same way they're treating the wealthy people, that means they're genuine, they're compassionate. But if they're giving me special considerations and then none, that means they're not trying to give me something, they're trying to take something from me. So a devotee wants to distribute the wealth of Krishna consciousness to all poor people, whoever they may be, whatever class they may be, men, women, children, regardless of caste, regardless of nationality. The world is spiritually poverty-stricken. Through our disciplic succession, we've been given great wealth. It is the duty of a devotee to share that wealth. Prabhupada said, when you get transcendental knowledge, if you don't distribute it, it does not fructify within your heart. In Krishna consciousness, the more you give, the more you receive. Therefore, the spirit of preaching should be very strong in the hearts of the devotees to share this message with others. And if we have no compassion, if we don't have such a inclination or capacity to preach, then we assist those who have compassion. We assist those who are preaching. And in this way, we become part of the system of compassion. And to those who are our equals, we should develop very intimate, loving friendships, where we discuss with one another those subjects that elevate our consciousness. Srila Prabhupada says this is called ishtagoshti. Now, within our society, there's been many different trends of what ishtagoshti means. In some temples, ishtagoshti means everyone just discusses the problems and complaints they have against the temple management. That is the common type of ishtagoshti. But actually, ishtagoshti is when people come together in love and friendship to discuss the subject matters of Krishna. Machchita matkita prana bodhyanta parasparam katyantashtamam nityam tushyanti charamanti cha. The lives of my pure devotees are surrendered to me. They derive great satisfaction and bliss conversing about me, enlightening one another on the subject of me. So this is true friendship. We must develop these types of relationships if we want to properly advance in Krishna consciousness. In the society we live in, sometimes we're conditioned to be very fearful of becoming too friendly with anyone because we may be cheated or we may be exposed for our own weaknesses. But devotees should strive to overcome these conditionings because bhakti means to have intimate, loving relationship with Krishna. If you cannot develop intimate, loving relationships with Krishna's devotees who are giving you Krishna, who are sharing Krishna with you, then it is a very ethereal concept to develop such intimate loving relationships with Krishna. Because the devotees, you can see Krishna in the neophyte state, we cannot properly see. We cannot properly speak to Krishna. We can speak with his devotees. So by developing this type of friendship with devotees, we learn how to actually have loving dealings. And as we become purified in that association, gradually that same relationship begins to develop with the source of all loving rasas, Krishna himself. If devotees have satisfying relationships in Krishna consciousness, they never leave. Why would they leave? The philosophy is perfect. It's perfect and complete. The culture and the lifestyle is the most satisfying culture in all of creation. But if we do not have proper relationships, even with all these things, our heart is dissatisfied. So we must learn how to open our hearts according to Rupa Goswami's instructions to actually share loving exchanges with each other, to give prasad and to receive prasad, to give gift and receive gift, to reveal one's mind in confidence and hear another's, all centered around helping one another to become deeper in one's bhakti, to come closer to Krishna. This happens to be one of the prominent rules and regulations of the scriptures on the path of bhakti. To make intimate friendship with persons who are your equals shouldn't be taken lightly. It's not just an extracurricular aspect of devotional service. We read about it again and again. It's in the 11th canto. Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. It's here. It's spoken by Rupa Goswami. It is one of the prominent rules and regulations. Srila Goswami explains, of all the different rules and regulations, there's thousands of them. He explains 64 prominent ones. And of the 64 prominent, there's 5 that are most essential. And one is associating with devotees. But what does it mean to associate with devotees? It means this: to honor those who are our superiors, to show compassion to those who are in a lower level, and to make intimate friendship with those who are our equals. This is a regulative principle that must be followed. Otherwise, there will be a defect in our execution of devotional service. So it should be taken very seriously. The idea of the counselor systems that we have created in some of our temples is to provide that format by which this is very much encouraged. Because if it's not very much encouraged and prioritized, we won't have time. We're doing so much to maintain our families, so much to serve the mission, that we just don't have time to make friendships with anyone. But you're neglecting a sacred, essential principle. It's not just something sentimental. It's a rule. And Prabhupada describes how devotees should learn how to inspire each other by discussing the topics of Krishna consciousness together, discussing how we can better serve the mission of the Lord together. And by developing spiritual love and spiritual trust amongst each other. And of course, Prabhupada explains that just as we should develop these intimate friendships with Vaishnavas who have mutual interests and understandings, we should avoid even Vaishnavas if they are challenging our faith, if they are attacking what is sacred in our heart. It's a very, very important principle. Prabhupada explains, just like you do not embrace a tiger, but you offer obeisances to Krishna in the tiger's heart from a little distance. So similarly, even Vaishnavas who are blaspheming what is sacred in our heart, or who are not living according to proper behavior, we should offer obeisances from a distance. But if we associate with them intimately, our spiritual lives could be very much disturbed. Is there any questions? Yes?
Maharaj, as you said, some devotees, they were in the movement, but now they are off the movement because the person in contact with the movement, they were exploited by them. How do we get back such people?
We could be the best we could be in our service to such a person by being honest, by being exemplary and compassionate. Then we will give that person the best we have to restore their faith. If somebody is having spiritual difficulty, we should still honor and respect them. And as far as possible, try to give them compassion. We should not reject them. If we reject somebody who's having a difficult time in Krishna consciousness, then what is our position? When we had no Krishna consciousness, if we were treated that way, what would have been our hope? So devotees should always be respect and honor all Vaishnavas, even if they're having great difficulties. Even if they're in a fallen state, we should honor and respect them. And if we have the capacity to not be infected by their condition, we should try our very best to show compassion to them. And if people just see that someone cares about me and they're trying to show some compassion to me, then that could revive their faith. So just be the best you could be in your service to every living entity.